wa ala alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Once upon a time in Mecca, there was some girls sitting on a patio next to a house, and an old Jewish man saw them giggling, joking around and laughing. And this Jewish man, who was visiting Mecca, an older person, came to these girls, saw them, was walking by them, came to these girls, and all of a sudden they were a little bit surprised to see this old man just, you know, appearing out of nowhere and addressing them. So the girls stopped laughing, and the man said, the Jewish guy, he told the girls that, you know, that the last apostle of God is coming. The last messenger of God is coming. And if you are smart, one of you should become his wife. And whichever one of you will become his wife, you will be blessed. And the girls, it's like looking at this old man with long hair and long beard. Disrespected. So the girls, like, picked up some stones and started throwing at him and told him to get away. Get away from us. Except one girl who took the words of that old man to heart, and that girl. And in that time, she used to entertain guests that are scholars, Jewish rabbis, Christians, scholars who would be there in the area. She would invite them over and have discussion with them and would learn from them. And these people would be, because of the fact that Khadija is wealthy, they would come there, they would be in a living room, and they would discuss things and talk about things, and she would serve them and have lunch and all these things, and she would be a part of the discussion. This is how she was raised. One time when they're having a discussion on her patio, there was a Jewish rabbi and there was her cousin, her first cousin, by the name of Waraqa ibn Nawfal. Now Waraqa ibn Nawfal was a Christian, and he was a Christian scholar. He learned many things, and he was also involved in the discussion as they were having it with a Jewish rabbi, who were speaking about many things, including the society that they live in, which was the topic of the day. Everyone used to speak about the ills of the society and the vices that are here and how terrible the situation is and when will it ever improve and what will make it to improve. You know, these were the discussions of the day, right? That's what people used to discuss. They used to look at what's going on, especially intellectuals, especially people who are educated. This is what they used to discuss in those days. And so as they were discussing on the patio regarding this, a young man, the prophet, he was a young man then, a youngster then, was walking by. He was walking by, and the Jewish rabbi who was there, saw him walking by. The prophet caught his attention, so the Jewish rabbi told the gathering, can we call that young man here? And since this was the neighborhood of Khadija's tribe, so she said, yes, why not? So she sent a servant to go and invite the young man over here. Now she doesn't know who he is right now. This is when the prophet is still young, a youngster. She, had him invited there. He came by the patio. The Jewish rabbi said, young man, if it's all right with you, with your permission, can I ask you to take off your shirt and show me your back? prophet, you know. And I said, I mean, but, you know, this is an older man, a learned man, means no disrespect, right? And so the prophet said, all right, you know, since you are asking, I will do that. And he pulled back his shirt, and the rabbi saw the back, and whatever he saw, he was pleased with it. And the prophet put the shirt back on. And so, you know, he says, you know, thank you very much for that. And I wish you all the best and all these things. And the prophet went along just like that. He went along. Now, when Khadija witnessed what happened, yeah, she was like, listen, you're my guest here. But did you know what you just did? You know, this youngster belongs to Bani Hashim. This is Abu Talib's nephew. He belongs to, you know, this is Abdul Muttalib's grandson. If they found out what you did, they'll kill you for it. I mean, of all the disrespectful things that you could have done, this is what you did. So the Jewish rabbi there said, let me tell you who this young man is. You know who this young man is? This young man is going to be the ruler of the Arabs. This young man is the last messenger of God, the promised one. And he went on to explain that. This is the first time Khadija saw the prophet. And actually got an introduction from him. And she is still young. And when she heard that, you see, this is how the prophet and his image is being built up in her. She's already interested in knowledge. She has already learned what the Bible and the Old Testament and the New Testament has to say. And the promises that have been made by Jesus of the apostle who's coming, who's going to show the rest of the world and who's going to show the light to the rest of the world. She has already knows that. She already sees the signs and heard the signs of what the Jews have to say and their teachings have to say. She already knows why this is all happening. Now all of this is her discussions and her intellectual pursuits that she was into. But then as she saw the prophet, obviously a statement like that would be very random. And it would be hard for someone who's intellectual just to accept it like that. I mean, why would anyone just accept a random statement like that saying, hey, you know what, you know, this guy is going to be the ruler of the Arabs. And you're like, okay, maybe you ate too much, you know. You're already an old rabbi here and this and that. You know, you'd be thinking so many factors as to this outrageous statement that is being made. But these statements are being made in front of her. She sees the prophet. She saw her for the first time. And that's where she knew who this person was. She heard it from people who are intelligent and learned. People who you would trust normally. And so she heard it from their mouth. And that's why you see that she was intriguing the prophet in the first place. So when the chance came for her to employ the prophet as a worker for her and to see him closely, this was a chance she did not want to miss. This was a chance she did not want to miss. And hence she hired him, she worked with him, she saw him closely, she asked her servant Maisara to keep an eye on him and to tell her everything about him. And when Maisara told all the news regarding the prophet as to what he went through, then she was now sure. And from this point onward, she knew that if there's anyone that she's going to marry, it's going to be him. Now this hesitation, right, I want to stop over here to just speak about a point that many of you might have heard and might have said things. Right? My friends, history says, many historians say, that Khadija was married two times before. And they give the names of the people that she was married to. And it says that she had children from them also. She had children from them also. And they gave the names of the children also as she's married, you know, that she had. Now, when we are looking at history and we are looking at her reaction to getting married and finding a spouse on one hand, when you look at history, she doesn't seem like someone who's experienced in marriage. You know, if you're already married two times, the third time is like, you know, a walk in the park. Right? You're not nervous, you're not worried, you're not anything. You're like, you know, whatever, you know? If you're already married two times, I already have children, so what's my market value, you know? You know, it's like, you know, you just take anyone. Work comes along and says, yes, okay, you married them. I mean, usually this is a situation of someone who's already married before. But the way that Khadija is acting, her nervousness, her doubt, her inability to decide, and her inquisitiveness into making sure that he's the right one, really shows that she's not someone who was married before. And then on the other hand, we will hear, and we have heard in history, that many people proposed to her. Great kings proposed to her. The leaders of the Arabs proposed to her. The chiefs of Makkah proposed to her. All these people proposed to her and she rejected them. And she married two lowlives and no names. You know, and then this is the third one. Really, the math doesn't add up. The math doesn't add up. The history that says that she was married before really does not add up. Because if you are married before, there's a certain behavior you show. It's natural that I've been married before. I know what marriage is. I've been through two husbands. So you know what? I know what it is. So I'm not going to be nervous and all like, I can't handle this, you know. I need someone to, you know, help me out here. I need a wali over here. Listen, you don't act like that. You're independent now. And she's wealthy. She doesn't need anyone else. So her nervousness and her attitude show that she was never married before. This has been also spoken of by many ulama and historians. Ibn Shahr-e Ashub is the most prominent of them, who clearly and decisively says that Khadija was never married before and the Prophet was the first husband of Khadija. And that too, her age was not 40, she was 26 when she married the Prophet. So that history that we see, which really throws light when we look at the actual events that happened, shows that yes, this is how she is. And that shows that her age also matches her temperament and her behavior that she's showing when she's getting married to the Prophet. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So now, with that in mind, my friends, here she is. She wants to get married to the Prophet. She speaks to the Prophet. You know, she sends her friend, Nufaysa, to go and give the message to the Prophet. And she goes and Nufaysa talks to the Prophet and says that, listen, you know, I mean, you know, there's a woman who's interested in this and that. She says, this is her, you know. And after that, the Prophet comes there and they talk. And I went through the whole incident yesterday. So now everything is decided upon. She has already spoken to him and said yes, and he has already spoken to his uncle. His uncle with his family comes over here after verifying that she's ready for it. As they come over there, and her uncle, Amr ibn Asad, doesn't know about what happened before. He is just an objective viewer. He was just asked to go and meet these people. These people come and make the proposal to him, and he thinks that, well, you know, if here is a niece of his, his niece, who's the wealthiest woman in Makkah, very dignified and noble and everything, knowing his experience with her, that she has refused the best of the best and all these things, he tells Abu Talib and Bani Hashim, based on my experience, I can say right now, the answer is going to be no. She's not going to agree to this proposal. Now, as soon as Abu Talib heard this, and the rest of them heard this, they were furious. I mean, it is like an insult, right? You know, you come all the way here and everything, and you make a proposal, and right away, no is the answer. What? You know, and so they felt upset. They were wronged and this and that. So they went back. So now the news reached Khadija that the marriage proposal has gone south and went sour. And you know what? They were told no on their face. When Khadija heard that, she's like, now what do we do? Because on one hand, Amr ibn Asad, being her uncle and the chief of her tribe, the elder of her tribe, is on one hand said no. Now for her to say yes after he said no would be an insult to him. And on the other side, she knows that Bani Hashim is furious right now. And there's no way they're going to come back for another proposal. Right? It's not going to happen. So how do you fix this mess? This was the predicament she found herself in. Who's going to come and solve this problem? Who's going to go and speak to her uncle on one hand, trying to convince him that she is okay with this, and on the other hand, go to Bani Hashim and explain to them this was all a mistake? So obviously everyone's upset right now, and there's no one who can help her, and she feels down and she feels sad and confused. And in that situation, she calls the only person that she trusts, who in this type of situation she knows has the wisdom and the intelligence to provide answers. So she calls upon her cousin, Warqa ibn Nawfal. This is the same Warqa ibn Nawfal who in relationship to her is her uncle also on one side and her cousin from another side. But because of the fact that they're almost the same age, so she can be open with him. Being an uncle, she respects him. Because of the fact that he's a very intelligent and learned person, she respects him and honors him. And on the other side, because he's so close to her age, she is open with him. She can talk to him about personal things. And when he comes to her, and he sees that she is sad, she's looking sad, and says, "Tell me, what is wrong? What happened? You look sad right now." And Khadija is like, "Yes, I'm sad." He says, "Why?" "Because I'm lonely. I don't have a companion. I don't have a soulmate. I don't have anyone who's with me. And I feel the need for it. I feel the need of having someone as a soulmate. You know, as a husband." Warqa says, "Whose fault is it, Khadija? Isn't it your fault?" Khadija said, "Why is it my fault?" He says, "Because everyone who proposed to you, you rejected it." I mean, this statement itself of Warqa is showing she was never married before. Right? "Is everyone who proposed to you, you rejected it." And Khadija said, "You know, tell me, who did I refuse?" And Warqa was like, "You know, you refused this king from this area. You refused this prince from Yemen. You refused this person from Sham and this Arab leader from here." And he mentions like a list of them, right? Which, yeah, I don't want to go through the names because it's just redundant. So she hears all of them and says, "But I don't want to leave Makkah. I want to stay in Makkah." "But even Makkans, every chief of Makkah has proposed to you." He says, "Like who?" And he says, you know, he says, like, for example, Ataba. He says, "Abu Jahl." Now, he didn't say Abu Jahl, but Abu Jahl is a name afterwards, right? Right? Abu Lahab in those days, right? Right? So he says, him. And then, you know, Shayba and all these people. He listed 6-7 names of people who proposed to her. Chiefs of Makkah, wealthy people. She hears those names and she says, "But they are lost. They're people who are ignorant, illiterate and lost. They have no path, they have no way." So then Nawfal says, "Listen, then the only one who's remaining, who is straight, who's on the right path, who's intelligent and wise, and is from Makkah, and is dignified and noble, the only one who's remaining is Muhammad ibn Abdullah." As soon as he mentions her name, her face brightens. A smile on her face and says, "So what do you think about him?" And Warqa is like, he's good. He's really good. Right? And I said, "Well, I know he's good. I heard many good things about him. But tell me something bad about him. You know, everyone has pros and cons. Tell me some cons, tell me some negative points about him, right? Because everyone has a negative point, right? I'm sure you know him. Can you say something negative about him?" So Warqa is like, "Okay, here's something negative about him." And so Warqa starts and says, "Here's what's negative about him. Asluhu asil, wa farhu tawil, wa tarafahu kahil, وخلقه جميل وفضله أميم وجوده عظيم قمر تكامل في نهاية سعده. He said that his origin is holy. His lineage is long. His honor is great. His generosity is magnificent. Now, Khadija hears this and says, those are not negative points. You know, can you tell me negative points about him? You know, negative? It's, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Negative points about him, right? So he goes on. He says, Al-Badro yatla'o min bayadhe jabinahi. The moon rises from his forehead. وَالشَّمْسُ تَعْذِبُ فِي شَكَائِكِ خَدِّهِ. And the sun, the lights of the sun emanates from his cheeks. Right? وَحُسْنُ الْبَرِيَةُ كُلَّهَ مِنْ إِنْدَهُ. And all that is beautiful is from him. And she says, that's not negative also. Tell me something negative about him, right? So he says, now this is a long hadith. I'm not going to give you the whole hadith, right? This is a long khutbah that Waraka ibn Nawfal is speaking regarding the Prophet. Right? In praise of the Prophet, he's telling this to his niece, to his cousin. He says, Al-waradu fi khaddihi wa dharru fihi wa fihi fi fihi wal بَدْرُ عَنْ وَجِهِ وَالْحُسْنُ يَقْكِيهِ أَقُولُ قَوْلُ زُلَيْخَ فِي أَوَازِلِهَا فَذَلِكُنَّ الَّذِينَ لَمُتَنَتَّى فِيهِ. And she goes on saying that he, when he walks, it's like the full moon walking. When he smiles, it's like the sun appearing. When he goes about, then his whole character, it's his character that is showing. No one has the character that he has. No one has the expression that he has. No one bears the truth that he has. No one has the trustworthiness that he has. And when she said all of this, Khadija said, but still you are saying negative points about him. Good things about him. Can you say something negative about him? Then at the end, after saying all of this, Waraka says, listen, how can I say negative about someone who has no negative about him? And you know what? You know, and after that, you know, then Khadija said, if that is the case, I want to marry him. Can you take my proposal to him? Baraka says, he looks at her. He knows where this was going. He's smart enough and he knows her also very well, knowing where discussions have taken place. Because once you're with someone for a long time, you know what's on their mind and where this is leading to, right? So Baraka sees that and says, so you want me to do this, you know? And she explains what happened. She explained to him what happened then, you know? The uncle came and all these things happened, right? He says, wow, so this is a predicament. You know, we find ourselves in, right? And you put yourself in a predicament, Khadija. Khadija says, yes, what can I do? Can you do something to unfix this, to fix this, and to make this happen? So Waraka says, all right, I'll do it. But with one condition, I want something from you. I want something from you in return for this. And Khadija said, listen, my wealth is in front of you. Whatever you want is yours. I'll give you everything. I'll give you whatever I have. Whatever I have, you know it. You know me very well. You and me, we are living together. You know me. Whatever I have is yours. You can take it. Waraka says, listen, I have no need for the wealth of this world. I have no need for the wealth of this world. You know me. I don't need anything from this world. He says, then what do you want? He says, I want you to promise me that you will get a promise from your husband that he will be the one who will intercede for me and give me forgiveness on the day of judgment. Khadija said, I promise you that he will forgive you on the day of judgment. My friends, first person to ask for forgiveness, the prophet, Warqa ibn Nawfal. Right? And you see, again, you know, history shows who these people were. And Warqa, obviously, when the prophet declared Islam, became a Muslim right away. He was waiting for the time. He knows history is there. These are learned people. People who are intelligent and wise and educated, have seen the signs and have studied them and know who the prophet is, know where this light is. So he said, then let me do this for you. So he went in order to fix this problem. So now as he went, first he went to his side of the family, which is Amr ibn Asad, the uncle of Khadija, who said no. And to make it short right now, right? He went there to her uncle and told Amr that, Amr, what did you do? Amr said, what did I do? He says, did you know what you just did? He says, no, I don't know what I did. Tell me what I do. He says, you have made Bani Hashim infuriated. Now you know what? They're going to hold this animosity against us. You refused them. You rejected them in their face. How disrespectful can you get? And now, obviously, Amr was now thinking. He says, well, you know, I was afraid. You know why I made the decision? I was afraid that if I said yes, after all the proposals came from the chiefs of Makkah, if I said yes to this orphan, then they would be upset at us. That all the other tribes will be upset at us. So, Warqa said, well, here's the deal. Everyone knows the outstanding features of this young man. No one denies that. Bani Hashim is behind them, and the whole of Makkah agrees with them. You know the stories, and you know what the people say about him regarding his trip to Sham and his journey here. You see, that's why it was important. The whole journey to Sham was to establish that amongst people, to establish respect amongst people. So that now this Warqa, as he's using it, Amr is like, yes, you're right, you know. He is respected and everyone has awe for him and everyone has this good opinion of him. So he says, if you agree with him, no one is going to do that. He says, but still, right, if I say yes, that doesn't mean that my niece is going to say yes. I've heard her many times and I know that she's going to say no. And Warqa said, what if I told you that she's okay with this? Amr was like, are you sure? Do you know her opinion? And Warqa says, yes, I do. He says, oh, what have I done? He says, if Khadija says yes, then obviously her opinion is more important than mine. She's wealthier. Everyone knows me because of her. That will make me look bad. That will make me look really awkward. He says, listen, let me do something. Right? Then this is Warqa now, using his brains. He says, let me do something to fix this, all right? Where your respect is maintained and her wishes are also done. He says, all right, whatever you say. So now he got Amr on his side. He got Amr on his side. He says, just do what I say, right? Just say yes. You know, just smile and say yes to them, you know? He said, all right. You know, so Amr got ready on this side. So now Warqa had to go to Bani Hashim. Now over there at Bani Hashim, it's a whole different situation. Everyone's infuriated. They're all taking oaths about what they can and cannot do and all these things. Abu Talib is the only one who's wise and sitting calm and relaxed, you know, thinking, okay, let's see what happens in the future. Let's not react to anything, everyone. Just relax, you know. Being the leader of the tribe and the leader of the clan, Abu Talib was sitting there. When Warqa came there and presented himself and everyone saw Warqa, now they respected him as I said, an educated person. As an intelligent man, they respected him, but still they were upset that your tribe has done this to us, right? So they're already upset at that. So he went directly to Abu Talib, knowing that Abu Talib is the silent type. He's the one who's wise and he's the one who listens to reason right now, while everyone else is emotional and they're not going to listen to reason. So he goes to Abu Talib and says, listen, right? Whatever happened, happened, right? There was a misunderstanding and there's this. What if I assure you, on behalf of my tribe and client, that this time the answer will be a yes, and I will go with you on your behalf? And Abu Talib, you know, looked at that and said, all right, This is my nephew's wishes there, and this is what he wants. I will do it. Abu Talib then stood up. Now, Hamza was really upset. You know, he was like, you know, he had a sword out, you know, sharpening it, you know. He said, I'm not, you know, there's going to be blood by tonight, you know, and all that, right? But when Abu Talib agreed, then everyone was like, okay, you know what? He's a leader. They all silently went behind him. So Waraka led the way. Abu Talib followed, and everyone else is behind him. They go to the house of Amr. When they went to the house of Amr, so Nawfal is the one who speaks and says, listen, what do you say? Do you want, you know, that they're here to ask for the hand of marriage of your niece, this and that of our niece, you know, Khadija and all these things? And Amr was like, you know, and this time he's very respectful, very humble, very humility, afraid that, you know what, we don't want a tribal war or anything like that. So he says, oh, of course, of course. And the answer is yes. Right? And when the answer was given yes, then obviously Abu Talib and Bani Hashim were like, okay then, you know, if the answer is yes, it's time to celebrate, you know, let's go and get our date fixed. So the date was fixed over there. And then, you know, they came back, and I don't want to go because you heard a lot about the marriage. I don't want to explain in detail regarding how the marriage took place. They went back, they got ready. The prophet was made ready. He was wearing the dress of his ancestors, the relics of the prophets of the past. He was wearing those things as he came out. Everyone came out. Abu Talib was at the head. Hamza was in front of the prophet. Abbas was behind the prophet and his uncle. Both of them were there to protect the prophet. They came there to the house, and then as everyone sat there, everyone was invited. So as everyone was invited, so the chairs were set and all these things, because the invitation went out from Khadija, and Khadija is a wealthy woman, and you know, it's very difficult to refuse the invitation of a wealthy person because you don't know when you'll need their help. So what happened is that most people end up going to wealthy people's weddings, right? Because of the fact that they don't want to make them upset. Now, because of the poor person, they'll be like, just ignore him. And the chiefs of Makkah would have ignored him also. But because it was from Khadija's side, and everyone knew this is Khadija's wedding, so everyone wanted to come there. And of the people who wanted to come there was also Abu Jahl, who came there, but at the last minute. He didn't want to come early because he already hated the whole idea. He hated the fact that, you know, that prophet is going to marry the wealthiest woman in Makkah, because that's going to make the prophet equal to the chiefs now. You see, now this whole horrible view of the future is coming in front of their eyes now. So as they look at this horrible prospect of what's going to happen, so this Abu Jahl comes to the wedding, sees that there's a chair that's open there, the chair over there that's empty amongst all the seats in the front line. He thinks that, hey, since he's the elder or the chief, that's meant for him, so no one's sitting there. So he goes there and sits on it. When he sits on it, the servant, Maisara, comes in and says, hey, this is not for you. So adding salt to injury right now, Abu Jahl is like really upset. Like, the heck with this, you know? You know, nothing's working out for me, right? So he sees that happening. And when that happens, now the actual party of the groom comes in. Everyone comes in. And on honor of the prophet, who's the groom, everyone stands up except for Abu Jahl. Abu Jahl doesn't stand up. Hamza sees him not standing up, sees that as a disrespect, goes straight to him and grabs his collar. And says, how dare you not stand for my nephew? Everyone stands up except you, and this and that. It was Abu Talib who came from behind and says, listen, this is a time of wedding, no need to fight, no need to create any problems here. So he asked Hamza to lay back. Hamza said, all right, I'll let you go this time, right? So again, you know, so they went there. The akd was read. On one hand, it was read on by Abu Talib. On the other hand, it was read by Waraka. Waraka is the one who read from the other side. Both of them were, you can say, people who believed in God. Both of them reiterated words and emphasized message that was for God. This is how it ended up to be. My friends, this marriage that took place, and the marriage that now will come, the effect of that marriage will come later. And what will happen after that? So inshallah, this is where we end up right now. I'll speak about other things, and it was a little bit long today, But a few minutes, inshallah, if you bear with me, inshallah, we will go and speak in regards to the event of the night. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Waraka ibn Nawfal, my friends, just the fact that he asked for forgiveness and said that, you know, on the day of judgment, he said that, I know that your husband is the one who will give, who will be the source of forgiveness for humanity. I know that. It's through my studies I know that. I've learned it and I know that. Your husband will be like that. My friends, when we look at the Prophet, really, the Prophet, his seerah is very important for us. Seerah is very important for us because it clarifies reality. You know what that means? It means that what is real, we get to know through the Prophet. How intense is something, we get to know through his reaction. So if the Prophet smiled at something, there is a meaning in that. If the Prophet got upset at something, there's a meaning in that. If the Prophet cried for something, there's a meaning in that. And hence we need to look at how deep that meaning is. One day, the Prophet was giving a sermon regarding the month of Ramadan. And as he was giving the sermon, Imam Ali raised his hand and said, Ya Rasulullah, I have a question. And so he stood up to ask the question, and he asked the question, what is the best action you can do in the month of Ramadan? The way Imam Ali asked the question, he stood him in front of the Prophet, he asked the question, Prophet saw him, his glance at the face of Imam Ali. Now, I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know what was going through the mind of the Prophet, but all of a sudden, Rasulullah started to cry. He started to cry. Tears were coming down and he was sobbing. Imam Ali said, Ya Rasulullah, why are you sobbing for? Why are you crying for? He says, Ali, all of a sudden, the image of your broken head came in my eyes. Ali, I saw your broken head, your head that is cracked in two. I saw it in front of my eyes and I saw your blood pouring out of your head and drenching your beard. Ali, when I saw this scene, I could not help myself but cry. When he said that, when he mentioned that, imagine this. He saw Imam Ali once, and then from there we can imagine the pain Imam Ali went through, because Rasulullah is crying for that pain, for the injury that Imam Ali went through. But let me give you some comparison here, my friend, some comparison. You know what? And this comparison will be seen in how Imam Ali reacts after he was heard. So what happened is that this comparison, you will understand it. Once Rasulullah cried for Imam Ali, once he cried for Imam Ali, and you see what Imam Ali went through and the adversity that he went through. But you know what? Abdullah ibn Abbas, you know who he was. He was a scholar. He was a commentator of the Quran who learned from the Prophet and Imam Ali. He says that I've always seen Rasulullah doing different things. But one of the seerat that I saw in the Prophet is this, that every time, no matter where Rasulullah is, whether he's in the masjid, whether he is in his house, whether he's in the battlefield or any place else, wherever Rasulullah is, in whatever condition he is, whether he's happy or sad or any time like that, but whenever Muhammad Mustafa would see Hussein, his grandson, in front of him, right away he would start crying. Right away tears will come down. Not just once, but every time he saw Hussein, right away he would start crying. My friends, all I want to ask you is this: what is Rasulullah seeing in Imam Hussein that is making him cry every time he looks at Imam Hussein? Every time he looks at Imam Hussein, what is it that's making him cry? Just that image is making the heart of Rasulullah melt, and his tears come out from his eyes and roll down his cheeks. Rasulullah cannot handle it, but he's crying for Hussein. Imagine what Hussein went through, that Rasulullah is crying so much. Every time I see Hussein, all I can say is this, if Rasulullah is crying for Hussein, just by imagining what happened to Hussein, then imagine what Zainab-e-Kubra went through. What did Zainab-e-Kubra went through when she saw Hussein? And she saw those things in front of her eyes. Imam Ali's head has been split open by a sword that is poisoned. Imam Ali is swooning. Hassan comes in behind Imam Ali, grabs him from the back. Hussein comes to the feet of Imam Ali. Both of them see Imam Ali. First in a state of shock. A second they look at Ali. Imam Hassan is now shedding tears on the face of Imam Ali. Hussein is shedding his tears at the feet of Imam Ali. Both of them hold on one side. Ali opens his eyes. When the blood is washed out of his eyes, looks that Hassan is crying. He says, Hassan, my son, don't cry for me, my son. Don't cry for me. Imam Hassan says, but why, father, why should we cry? He says, because Hassan, I see you throwing up your liver, throwing him and vomiting your liver because of the effect of poison. And then when Hussein hears that, he starts to sob at the feet of his father. And Imam Ali looks at Hussein and says, my son Hussein, please don't cry. Please don't cry, Hussein. Imam Hussein crying at his feet. Ali is saying, don't cry. You know why? Because Ali is saying, your mother has told me and has advised me, look after you. I will not be able to bear to see Fatima. And she will task me. She will ask me, why did you make my son cry? They picked up Imam Ali. They picked up Imam Ali and they were taking him. He was being held by both sides, who could not stand by himself. They were taking him to his house, literally carrying him. He could not walk on his own. And he is telling his companions and everyone, you thought that Ali's teachings were a lesson for you. Let this be a lesson for you today. That Ali, who you saw as a warrior and a champion, has been made to be such that he cannot walk anymore. Let this be a lesson for you, that Ali cannot walk anymore. Imam Ali is being carried like that. As he's being carried like that, Imam Ali now trying to tell people, learn a lesson from my death. My death will be the best lesson for you. And they walk by and they keep on walking until now Imam Ali tells his son Imam Hassan, Hassan, do me a favor. Tell these people to go away from here. Tell my companions to go away from here. Imam Hassan says, but my father, they are your friends, they are your lovers, they are here for you. He says, Hassan, I know this, Hassan. But you know, when they will come close to the house and my daughter Zainab will see me in this condition, she won't be able to hold back her tears. She will cry aloud. I don't want them to hear her. I don't want them to hear her cry. And I don't want them to hear her voice. Oh, Ali, what can I tell you? This is the same Kufa. This is the same street. This is the same neighborhood. And this is your daughter whose hands are tied behind her. And she's paraded in the streets. And those people of Kufa that you're hiding her from are throwing stones at her. سَأَلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ
يا محمود بحق محمد، يا الله بحق علي، يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطر، يا محسن بحق ياسين، قديم الاحسان بحق حسين. الله give us the tawfiq to be on the right path, wisdom to understand your guidance, hasten the reappearance of our imam, make us his helper when he comes. واخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين.